through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
What?
The left-handers, 1-1 pitch to Dylan. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. Grand salami time. Upper deck left field down the line. Dylan Moore with a grand salami. And the Mariners lead the Astros 11-8 in one of the greatest comebacks I've seen in a long, long time.
I love you, Curtis. What? A miraculous comeback for the Seattle Mariners, and I can think of no better guest to have today than the manager himself, Scott Servais, who I very, very briefly worried would be ejected. Instead, it is the Astros pitcher being ejected, but let's not talk about that just yet. What I loved about this game, and Mike Salk in for Jake Heaps today, was the comeback was fun. I mean, Raleigh getting a 3 RBI double and Seager's 3-run home run and obviously Dylan Moore's grand slam. All of that's amazing. I mean, the fact that they're two outs, bottom of the eighth and hit a grand slam when they've been down, it's like a movie. It's like you couldn't have planned that. I'm not sure what their winning percentage odds were, in the second, third, fourth inning, but it can't have been higher than 10%. So it's miraculous. It really was. But I don't think that I had fully bought into the team, and certainly not the rebuild, until after the game. After sitting for almost 4 hours, the better part of 4 hours, and watching this game, it was after that, when Scott Servais was speaking with reporters, that I think I finally bought in. So, cut number 5, take a listen to what Servais says about the way this team competes.
They really do. They did believe that, we're building something here really special. You know, it's an awesome group. I am just drained tonight. I have no voice left screaming at the umpires and everything else, but I said it early on. I love this team and I really do. I just love the way they compete every night.
Now, when you're watching the video of that interview, you can see him get a little bit emotional during that after he says they just believe that what we're building here is really special. That to me is the underlying thing about what makes this Mariners team feel different. And I know there are so many Mariners fans that have watched iterations of this team kind of draw them in and then let them down for 20 years. Because there have been good Mariners teams that probably should have pushed for a wildcard spot and didn't end up doing it. Yeah, maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but this year does feel different. I don't know that they actually do it, but this is the first time I feel like I can remember watching a team, a young team, an exciting team, the right group to start this young core that believes in themselves.
Well, first of all, you've never watched anything like this. I think you're right to think that. In the 20 years of missing the playoffs, the Mariners have never rebuilt. I know it's fashionable for everyone to joke and say rebuilding for 20 years. The Mariners have never rebuilt. So no, Stacey, you've never seen anything like this. You're absolutely right about that. You've seen veteran teams kind of hanging on and trying to make a couple of the right moves to piece it all together. You've seen big comebacks before, right? You saw the big comeback against San Diego when they were down 10 a couple years ago. You saw Franklin Gutierrez, what was it, a top 10 moment? That's what we were told when he homered against Aaron Loop in Toronto to complete it. And we've seen big, crazy comebacks before. Here's a newsflash. 30 teams a year come up with one big crazy comeback. Everybody, every year, comes up with a big comeback. But they don't all happen a few days before the trade deadline against the Astros, coming off 3 straight wins against the A's, with a young team that is starting to, as you said, believe in themselves and play for each other. No, they don't all happen like that. And I think that's what's kind of got you today. That and Scott Servais's dad energy, because everybody always
gets Scott. He's got so much of it.
Well, and usually it's sort of said as sort of a kind of make, not quite making fun of him, but like, there goes dad, Scott Servais. But I think you're right when you bring up how he got a little emotional talking about it like that. As a dad of the last 9 years, I can tell you that it's a lot easier to get emotional, especially over things like people playing for each other and starting to believe in each other, etc. It's a lot easier to get a little emotional over those things than before you're a dad.
Do you find yourself buying more into this team because of that same reason?
For this year, no.
Yeah.
Not really.
Well, it's easy. I mean, you look at like the pregame comparisons and Root Sports threw them up on the broadcast, and it's not going to shock you to see Mariners 30th in OPS and Astros first. I mean, there was a wide gap, and you can say, well, the Mariners bullpen is better than the Astros bullpen, and that's where it fall apart.
But yes.
But make no mistake, the Astros are a better team.
They are, but that bullpen really showed up last night and ended up factoring. I guess to answer your question, I think that this Mariners team is akin to the early Pete Carroll Seahawks teams. What I don't know yet is whether this is 2011 or 2012. Is this the team that doesn't make the playoffs because it's still missing that one next big piece, in that case Russell Wilson, to come in and kind of get them to the playoffs? Or is this the team that makes the playoffs but isn't quite ready to contend for the World Series yet? I don't know whether this is 2011 or 2012, and some of that may depend on what they do with the deadline and what some of the other teams around them do. Like, it takes a little bit of luck, et cetera, to kind of get there. But last night is a big step towards the overall long-term, how do they become a regularly contending product? And in that, I have a ton of belief.
I liked, I think it was Jim Bowden of The Athletic who talked about, and it goes to what you were saying about, are they the 2011, are they the 2012 Seahawks, that we won't quite know whether this Mariners team is for real for another year or so. Because we're going to have to look back and say, was this something where there were so many miraculous comebacks? I saw one stat that was like, you've had a grand slam hit by five different players in 52 days, which has never happened in MLB history before. Stuff like that is wild. Their run differential, all of that is insane. It feels improbable that they keep winning, and yet they do. We're not going to be able to know for a year plus whether or not this is chance and luck and a one-off kind of thing, the way that sometimes a great bullpen can be, or if this is them laying the foundation and successfully building up core pieces. So, I mean, I'm obviously eager to see that we won't know for a while. So we just have to kind of, you buy in or you don't to what they're doing right now.
What was your favorite moment from last night?
You know what? I want to say Dylan Moore's grand slam, but it might have been Scott Servais freaking out. Like, obviously the grand slam. So I was with my roommates. We were watching TV as Love Island, the USA version. We are watching UK. And I'm watching the game. So I had come back from visiting my mom and my sister. And when I left their house, it was after the first inning. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh God, what a horrible game. And I worked so hard to make my scorecard perfect. Like, now it's just going to be full of runs on Houston's side. And it really bothers me. I like a clean scorecard. So I sit down to watch the game. And all of a sudden, I'm getting drawn in. I can't pay attention to what we're doing. They keep talking to me. I'm ignoring both of them. And they go upstairs. It's like 11. No, at that point, it's like 10:50. And I'm glued to my computer screen. And Dylan Moore hits a grand slam. Mm. And it was the same thing where I texted my roommate who doesn't care about baseball, doesn't watch baseball. And she was like, oh, my God, and turned on the game. I mean, that's something where it's like, you get fans that are more casual fans or maybe have stopped buying in years ago that are like, what happened? Is this a movie? They couldn't believe it.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of you start to pick up steam. It's almost like the major league thing, right? Where the guys, like, just their little section keeps growing and growing. And who are these guys? And people who have kind of abandoned ship for the last few years or 10 years or 15 years start to come back slowly. And moments like last night are what end up capturing them. That's a heck of a baseball game. I mean, we could talk through it. We could go through the details of why they were able to come back. Raleigh's home or double and the home run by Kyle Seager, and, you know, the hidden heroes like Eric Swanson with two scoreless innings and going, you know, Scott Servais managed a whale of a game last night.
Do you want to talk about some of the things he specifically did?
I do. I'll get to him. And I mean, just some of the decisions he made, which could have backfired on him, all worked out as he just completely outmanaged Dusty Baker in that game. So, you know, there were a ton of hero moments for almost everyone on Jared Kelnick's walk to Tom Murphy's walk. I mean, like, you could kind of keep going. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody on that team, Shed Long with a huge RBI. Everybody played a major role. That is a 25-man win. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But at its core, it's such a great reminder of how fun baseball can truly be. And as great as it is, and it was, like, it came off the building momentum from the weekend, the three wins against the A's that got progressively cooler as you went. Mm-hmm. Then you deliver, probably after letting everybody down with this awful McCacken start and all that. And guess what? They played tonight. This isn't football where you have to wait a week. Not that I don't love football. It's not even hockey or basketball where you got to wait 2 days. They go again tonight.
Yes.
Hours after Scott Servais and Dusty Baker and the umpires were all yelling at each other and beanballs are getting thrown and benches are maybe going to clear and Dylan Moore is nearly going to get killed by his teammates. I thought they were going to knock that dude over after he ran around the bases. They get right back at it tonight. And tonight, you at least have a fair fight. You're going to throw a real major league pitcher instead of that poor sap last night.
Well, there's a little bit of a chess match still tonight for both managers because last night, Servais made a couple gambles.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there was the decision to put in your last bench player. But then also, I thought it was wise to keep McCacken in much longer. I think other managers, a worse manager, would have taken him out after the first.
Yeah, and out of sympathy. This poor kid just doesn't have it.
That's exactly right.
You can't afford to do that.
And they didn't do it, and it ended up probably saving them the game because it saved them a couple arms. But what do you do with that bullpen tonight? You really need Flexen to get through quite a few.
Well, thankfully, I mean, yes, you're right, but here's some good news in there. A, you're about to get Santana back, which is great. B, you didn't have to use a bunch of your guy. You didn't use Steckenrider last night. You mm-hmm. didn't have to use Sadler last night. So, you know, they still have some dudes that they're capable of going to who are going to be fresh tonight. You're right. Scott managed a whale of a game. The McCacken thing. So that guy was awful. Poor guy. Poor dude. Just wasn't up.
I was optimistic after he struck out Jose Altuve to start. I was like, here we go.
And then it really went south in a hurry. But it kind of reminded me of the Yusei Kikuchi start against the Yankees a few weeks ago. He didn't have it in that game. He got bombed early. They were clearly out of the game, and he didn't quit. He didn't give up. Scott didn't take him out because he can't afford to when you're having these bullpen starts every five games. And so you saw Kikuchi just have to grit his way through it, and he made it through five. And the Mariners nearly came back in that game. They didn't. They ended up losing by a run, but they had the game-winning run at the plate in the ninth in that game. They just weren't able to get the hit that day. Okay. It certainly gave them confidence. It showed the grit, showed the determination. The next day they beat the Yankees. Then they win two straight against the Angels heading into the break. So their ability to say, all right, maybe we're not going to win tonight, but we're going to draw something positive out of this game, even if it's just saving our bullpen to give us a shot in the next two. And oh, by the way, in the meantime, it turned out that they were able to claw and scratch their way all the way back from the dead. What a just fantastic game for them.
All right. As a reminder, we are going to have Scott Servais on with us today at 1 p.m. Don't go anywhere. You want to hear that. And then coming up in just about 30 minutes, we're going to be talking about some trade deadline questions we have. If you have any you want to send in, go ahead and do those 710-710 Mac and Jack's text line. Right now, it is time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Jamal Adams expected to report for Seahawks training camp despite not yet reaching an agreement on a contract extension. What is the real headline?
Now, this is all I want Seahawks fans to take from this, which is headline in front of you. Do not panic about this yet. When you don't see Jamal Adams practicing with this team and when you don't see him with a new extension on the 28th this Wednesday when they report to camp and go out on that practice field, don't panic. Don't panic. This is a huge negotiation. Not only in most of the second half of June and into July does this team go on a break when they don't usually get any deals done at all. They're also coming back and negotiating, trying to figure out if they're going to make Jamal Adams not just the highest paid safety, but maybe the highest paid defensive player on their team. That's a huge negotiation. He's got all the leverage. I think they're going to get this done, and it's way too early to panic, but I do want to keep the little like underlined yet at the end.
I'll disagree with you on this
one.
No? I'm not panicked, but I'd be a little worried. Look,
okay.
You spent a tremendous amount of draft capital to acquire Jamal Adams. Part of the reason why is not just because of how he plays, but how he leads and how he talks and how he influences the team with his personality. Getting Jamal Adams out on the field in practice is part of why you acquired him. So, all right, it doesn't have to be Wednesday. It doesn't have to be tomorrow, but it better be soon. I don't want to see a protracted holdout that doesn't put Jamal Adams out on the field. And oh, by the way, getting him on the field, his health is a concern also. So yeah, I do want to see him on the field. I want to see that he's healthy. I want to see that the shoulder's okay, the finger's okay, the leg's okay, because a healthy Jamal Adams really darn important to this season.
Next.
Headline Rewrites.
On the very same day Texas and Oklahoma asked the SEC for a formal invite, Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkov says he doesn't think there's any risk of the conference staying at 12 teams if other conferences continue to expand. What's the real headline?
Look, it's not about making aggressive moves for the Pac-12, which is why, rather than sink the conference with a horrible media plan, this time they're going to let failure come to them. Don't be aggressive. Don't
That's
go
the
out
move.
There and grow.
Don't
That's
be
the move.
Aggressive.
Don't be aggressive. H-E-G-R-E-S-S. Don't do it, though. The opposite of that. It's look, I don't envy the position Kliavkov is in, trying to fix what's been a down conference, a struggling conference that kind of sunk itself. But if there was going to be a time where you were going to be aggressive, now would be it.
Well, they tried this, right? They tried it with Texas back when everyone was expanding the last time. Look, if you're the Pac-12, I think you got to be in defense mode. You got to be making sure that USC doesn't bolt before you're worried about trying to bring other teams in. Like, if I was USC, there's no chance I would stick around this conference. See ya. I don't want to be here.
What I don't want him to do is be like, oh, we're completely fine not getting to more than 12 teams, but like at least stay there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get to less than 12.
Don't get to 8.
Yeah. It's worrisome. All right, what's next?
Headline rewrites.
The wee hours of the morning. I don't really actually know the time difference between here and Tokyo, but it was early this morning. Mm-hmm. We get the news that Simone Biles has withdrawn from the gymnastics team's final and is uncertain about her status for the individual competition. What is the real headline?
Quote, mental health isn't that big of a deal, says man who hasn't seen therapist in 20 years. Now, originally a version of this was, she needs to toughen up, says man from couch behind anonymous Twitter account, which is kind of a lot of what I was seeing. It's like,
first name, lots of numbers.
First name, lots of numbers. No photo or a photo of an athlete that they most certainly are not. Like, congratulations on making your photo, Tom Brady. That doesn't make you athletic in any way. In fact, you're probably barely exceptional. And coming out here and complaining about what she's doing. And look, if you want to say that you're disappointed because she was the name to follow in the Olympics and basically what
she's
a lot of...
She's quite literally the only non, like, other than the golfers and the basketball players, et cetera. She's the only Olympian I know.
Yes.
I don't know the name of one other Olympian.
I think that there's been a serious lack of empathy for the pressure that she's under, not just with, like, years and what has been clearly a corrupt organization with USA Gymnastics. This isn't a team sport. I know that this is the women's team final, but this isn't really a team sport. The pressure is on her. The world is watching her. I think it's a bit of a false equivalency to say, oh, Jordan had the flu game. You can do this. It's not the same.
It's not. If it was the individual competition, I think there'd be a little bit more sympathy because you'd be able to say, all right, look, it's her life. She doesn't want to compete.
I think people have unfair expectations as to what makes, you talked about this, what makes a goat, right? And your point was really interesting about there just being a lengthy history now of great examples of exceptional players. But I think one of the things that people will also say is playing through tough things. Well, I think people have a really hard time assigning a degree of real toughness to mental health struggles because they don't understand it.
Yeah, I you're absolutely right about that. And I think as a culture, we need to become more understanding of people's mental health and where they're at. I think part of the struggles here, though, for people to understand, and I understand why it's difficult. This is a dream come true for so many who would kill to have that level of talent, that level of ability, and to see her not being able to do it, not because of something physical, but because of something mental. I think there's a natural inclination to say, well, you can help that.
Then challenge that. Then challenge that part of you. I mean, all it takes is just making yourself realize that she doesn't owe you anything. And she certainly doesn't owe USA Gymnastics anything after everything that they've put hundreds of women through. Like, let's change the way that we're thinking about this and change the way as to what makes a tough athlete.
Yeah.
Hasn't she already proven that she's exceptionally tough? And gymnastics is so exceptionally difficult, Mike, and what she's doing is so dangerous. If you're not in the right headspace, you can seriously hurt yourself.
These are great points. So I'm going to now have to kind of play devil's advocate to argue against you.
Choice.
Like,
that's
I don't
want
to be the jerk here, but I think that one of the challenges we have is that we tend to praise, heap extraordinary praise on people who do fight through adversity.
Yes.
My favorite, we talked about it a few weeks ago, my favorite Olympic moment of all time is Kerry Strug. Injured, barely able to walk, somehow sticking that landing of her vault and getting carried off the field by Bella Caroli, and she's in clear pain. She wasn't the best player on that. She wasn't the best gymnast on that team, by not even close. I mean, Shannon Miller was better, and Dominique Dawes was better, and Moshiano was better. I still remember them all. They were that good, but she was the one who fought through adversity to win. I think when we don't see people willing to try that, we have a tendency to say, okay, I don't hate her for it. I'm not mad at her, but I can't put her in the Carrie Strug pantheon because what Carrie did was truly, truly gritty and impressive.
Also, we have a guest, Mike. You're going to be really excited about this. As a resident NHL expert, we're having the Kraken first-round pick, Maddie Beniers, at 1:30 today.
Really?
So just confirmed.
Just confirmed.
This
so
is
get
be a big
your questions
day.
Right. We got a big day. We've got the Kraken's first-round pick and also Scott Servais.
He went to Milton Academy, rival high school of where I went to school.
I knew that we would go to this. I knew this would happen.
Do you think he'll care about me getting a concussion at Milton Academy?
You should ask him.
I think
that in a 10-minute interview, that is worth
where
2 minutes
of our
time.
Where were you, Maddie, when I got a concussion at Milton Academy?
Is it going to hurt your feelings when he says, not born yet?
Because he was born in like 03, I think.
Is it true?
Yeah.
Oh, this
so
is,
are you gonna?
This is in 1994.
When he answers this,
where were his parents then? His parents were probably in elementary.
You know what?
School.
Actually, on second thought, Mike, I would love for you to ask this question. I would love it more than anything.
You guys are mean.
Oh man. Also, Curtis. Correct me if I'm wrong. You've been getting calls from some guy in University Place.
Yeah, he keeps blowing up our phone lines here.
I want to put him on air.
Okay.
Okay. So this guy that's been calling us all morning nonstop has been dying to get on air, calling Curtis every couple minutes. So we're just going to let him on. And you know what? Listener or caller, it better be worth it. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
The set by Seawald. Here's the pitch on the way to Tucker. Swing and a fly ball to the left field. Drifting back is Moore to the warning track. He's there. He makes the catch up against the wall. And the ball game is over. It doesn't get any better than that. Holy smokes, what a comeback. 11-8 win by the Mariners over the Astros tonight.
I can only assume this caller wants to sound off about this game. How many times did he call you, Curtis?
I mean, at least 9 times. I'm like, dude, look, we got to open the show. We got to set the scene for the show. Then we can get you on.
Well,
all right?
Here's what's pretty nice is normally we have Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer, joining us at 11:30 every weekday. Mike, though, is filling in for Jake today.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mike. And so we have, luckily for this caller, an open segment. So do we have him right now?
We've got him.
Yeah. All right. So this is Jake from University Place. Jake, what did you want to call in about? You seem like a pretty aggressive caller.
Hello? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, caller, what do you want?
Oh, okay. Well, first, I just wanted to say it is an honor to be on your guys' show. I listen every day.
Thanks.
You guys are fantastic. Stacey, you're an amazing lead host. Curtis,
wow.
I mean, incredible producer, best voice on the station.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Mike Salk, you're filling in for Jake. It's a tough place to be. I know, big shoes to fill, but you're doing an amazing job. Doesn't surprise me.
That's
with
really
all
nice.
Your experience. So
it's like,
yeah,
Russell Wilson level positivity.
Show,
wow, impressive.
It's a little suspect.
But I just got to say, that game last night was epic. Was legendary. You start this thing off, and you know it's basically a bullpen day. I don't know who that poor kid is that just got rolled out there to make his first start out there at T-Mobile Park. But bless his soul for, you know, going out there and you know, giving up 6 runs, but staying in it and hanging in there. And then they give up 7. They're down 7, and they're the comeback kids. And now all of a sudden you have Cal Raleigh up there that's making a big hit, getting the bases cleared. Then you got Kyle Seager, the old vet, the dad energy coming through, hitting a 3-run home run. And then you got a clutch hitting by Shed Long. Scott Servais just out managing Dusty Baker the whole way, making critical moves along the
caller,
way.
I mean, you know, caller, I don't want to interrupt you. The text line's
Dylan
getting.
Moore? Are you kidding me?
I feel like you need to be a little more fired up. I mean, normally we have another Jake, my co-host who's in here, who gets really fired up screaming about this team.
Yeah.
And, you know, caller, I got to say, there's some people on the text line thinking they can get a little more fired up than you.
Well, also, do you have anything to say, or are you just going to tell us what we all saw in the game last night?
Well, sorry, this is my first time calling into a show, so I'm a little bit nervous.
Don't be nervous. I'm very intimidating.
I also have a newborn that was born very recently that's in the room next to me, so I'm trying not to yell.
Now,
so
wait a minute.
I apologize.
Okay.
Can we stop the shenanigans so we can at least congratulate Jake on having a new baby?
Congratulations, Jake Heaps. That newborn wouldn't happen to be River James Heaps, would it?
I mean, I'm on paternity leave, so, I mean, I don't know if that's allowed, so right now it's in university place. So.
I'll let you guys know that Jake was...
I'm not sure what the rules on this
You're
are.
Telling me you didn't give the baby... I thought it was supposed to be River Stacy Heaps. You didn't get a name?
I'm offended.
What? That's terrible.
No, I'm sorry. She suggested it quite a few times, actually, but it never made the final cut. I'm sorry.
Hey, Jake, let me ask you the same question I asked Stacy a little bit ago. What was your favorite moment of the game last night? Choose one.
Choose one. I honestly would have to say that the Dylan Moore home run was my favorite moment. I mean, honestly, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, that was bases loaded. You have a chance to, you're not even looking for a grand slam. Just Dylan Moore, please, like, draw a walk or get the tying run. And he hits a freaking grand slam into the upper deck. I mean, are you kidding
me?
And I'm sitting here. And I've got Brooke and I've got River next to me, and somehow I am able to keep it together, and I'm doing a breathless yell and fist pumps and going crazy. Then I had to run outside, I kid you not, and just let it all out. I mean, I could not believe what I was seeing. It's just unbelievable stuff. And we've seen this from these guys multiple times this year. But honestly, Salk, the reason why I hesitate is because the other favorite moment is actually Scott Servais sticking up for his guy and J.P. Crawford, and I would have actually liked to see him take it a step further and get ejected in that moment, because I just love the fact that he stood up for his team. The energy in the building was unbelievable, and those are the moments that, you build camaraderie, you build chemistry, you build self-belief, but that you really have a club from top to bottom that believes in you. In you, and you have a manager that's willing to fight for you. I mean,
well, the only thing I would say, Jake, is he didn't need to get ejected. They did what he wanted him to do. I mean, like, he didn't need to keep fighting. True. He won the argument.
Could have added to his edge, though.
Well, all right, but he won the argument. He got the other guy ejected, and quite frankly, they kind of needed it. Like, they couldn't afford any ejections on their own. They were out of players.
Well, it's very true, but at the same time, I don't think that he had to make much of an argument. I mean, that was such a Bush League pitch. By Rayleigh on J.P. Crawford. I mean, it was so obvious. But I think that you're right. I mean, you know, Scott Servais, that's why he's the manager. That's why I'm some schlub on sports talk radio that's, you know, fired up and fist pumping at the TV. But I think that those are moments that, as you look at it, that I got really fired up about that from Servais, seeing that emotion, seeing that passion, seeing that fight. It just really is all encompassing of who these guys are right now, and it's so much fun to watch.
If you got to pick the next move this team makes, what would it be?
In terms of a trade? In terms of
anything, a trade? I mean, for instance, if you guys couldn't tell,
DFA
we're talking to Jake
Heaps.
He couldn't stay away from the radio, and he was sounding off about this, and we were like, Jake, we need to give you an outlet. You're going to explode. So I was thinking, for instance, Jake, and I know that you saw this too, when Servais was like, the camera was focusing on him as he was walking down into the dugout at the end of the game. I was just thinking, A, what a moment, and B, why is he not extended? What are we doing?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that, as I look at the Mariners organization right now as a whole, I really am perplexed by the position that they're in right now and not extending Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto. I think that there's, if you just want to look at it from a big picture, okay, Jerry DePoto, you have questions, but overall, what he's done in the last 3 years since they've decided to tear this thing down, I don't think you can really argue much with what he's done. And Jerry and Scott Servais are kind of hand in hand in this thing in terms of the way they work. And the team that they've built, the culture that they've built, I think has been fantastic. So number one, I would extend those guys. What more do you want? What more do you want to see from them at this stage of the game? And number two, they've got to get these guys reinforcements. And I don't mean, you know, hey, this is a, without a doubt, this is a World Series team. This is a World Series contender. But we all know that this team has some obvious holes. There's rumors that they're really going out there and trying to secure a second baseman. I think that would be a great addition. But really, where you see it is the starting pitching. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the fact that we were able to win, the Mariners were able to win this game on a, well, let's just face the facts, it's a bullpen day against the Astros, is a miracle. And you can't consistently do that down the stretch if you want to be a team that's going to secure a wild card berth. So I think that those are the two moves that I would seriously be looking to do after this game, because these guys have earned it.
All right, he is Jake Heaps, and you're going to wait until Friday until he's actually back in studio. But congratulations to you and Brooke. Jake on paternity leave right now, but we knew that you needed an outlet after that wild game.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now I can relax and I can go focus on my children.
Yeah,
thank
take
you.
It easy, man. All right. Bye, Jake.
See you, buddy. Congrats.
All right, coming up next, we have been seeing a ton of Mariners trade deadline questions, and we're going to look at a bit of them, so don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, a few trade deadline questions for the Mariners. Before I get to that, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Chris Flexen takes the mound for the Mariners tonight in game two of their series against the hated Astros. Thanks for that copy, Curtis.
Anytime.
Those pesky Astros. Pre-game starts at 6 p.m. First pitches at 7:10 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. We have a couple names being linked to Seattle right now, so I'll start with this one from John Morosi, MLB Insider. The Mariners are one potential suitor for Trey Turner. They have high-end prospects to interest the Nats and are looking at infielders controllable beyond this season. The M's have been happy with J.P. Crawford, and Turner can move around the diamond. So that's the first one. I want to also get to report about Trevor Story from Jeff Passan in his latest column. First of all, how realistic is Trey Turner or any big name infielder to you guys?
Well, Trey Turner's a really good player. And some, like yesterday, we talked a lot about Whit Merrifield, where it's like, yeah, you give up the Taylor Trammells and Shed Longs and 10th best pitcher Juan Thens of the world in order to bring back someone like Merrifield. Trey Turner's going to take a lot more than that. He's a significantly better player. He's an MVP candidate kind of guy who plays a premier position, hits with power, runs, plays defense, you name it, he does it all. So if you're looking at Trey Turner, you're talking about Nuelvi Marte, right? You're talking about Emerson Hancock. You're talking about some of the premier names that are inside the top five or six of your prospect list. Is it worth it? Yeah, it might be. Yeah, I think you could probably talk me into it, especially if you plan to sign him after next year, because you're talking about MVP kind of player who's only 28 years old. If Marte ever turns into Trey Turner, you'd be unbelievably psyched, but there's no guarantee he'll do that. And if he does, it might not be for 5 or 6 years. So yeah, you could absolutely talk me into that, but also I think there's a real legitimate chance that, and the Mariners should be throwing their name into every hat and every report. Why? Well, if you're negotiating with the Royals and your real target is Merrifield, but they hear that you're also willing to go deal for Turner to play second base, well, then you have a little bit more leverage, right? Whereas Jerry has no leverage when it comes to starting pitchers. He desperately needs one, and we saw it again last night. Maybe he's trying to build some leverage when it comes to the second base market.
How do you build leverage with starting pitching, or is he just going to have to give up more than he's willing there if he wants to actually get
someone? I don't know. I think he's in a really tough spot. I mean, you've got to convince teams that you love Justice Sheffield and Justin Dunn, and that they're both going to be healthy and they're both going to matter down the stretch. And to me, that'd be a really tough take.
Yeah, I feel like you have no choice but to add. They don't have a shot at a wild card unless they add to starting pitching, or unless Dunn comes back and suddenly is phenomenal, but he's going to be coming off of injury after missing a lot of time.
Well, and I would say even if you had Dunn, you would still need starting pitching. I mean, the fact is you generally need 6 or 7 to make it to the playoffs. And oh, by the way, you're coming off a season where nobody threw more than 60 games worth, and you're arguably your best pitcher, and Logan Gilbert has never gone this far into a season as a rookie. So put all of those things together, you're not going anywhere without more pitching.
Well, and that's also why when Flexen has a bad outing or Kikuchi has a bad outing, even if it's 1 or 2, we start to push the panic button a little bit, because those have been your two most reliable guys.
Well, and when you know you're giving up 20% of your starts to random bullpen games where you're probably not going to have much of a shot to win, it puts that much pressure to be perfect on the other 3 or 4 guys in your rotation.
First of all, McCacken only gave up 7 runs.
Okay.
I feel like you're being a little unfair.
I don't think I am.
There's another name being thrown around here, and you guys have heard it before. It's Trevor Story. So he's already been linked to a couple different trades. Jeff Passan, though, in his latest column says, quote, one sneaky option. This is for a trade for Story. The ascendant Seattle Mariners, who aren't moving J.P. Crawford off shortstop, but could slide Story to second base.
Yeah.
They certainly need a second baseman. Second baseman and starting pitcher, obviously, their two greatest needs.
Yeah, Story's great. He's done at the end of this year in terms of his contract. So you're probably not giving up quite as much. On the other hand, he's a big name player, and there's going to be a huge market for him. While I like the idea of Story long term, I would prefer them try to sign him in the offseason. I just don't know that I'd be wanting to give up major prospects for a rental at that level. It's not to say I wouldn't pick up a rental, but I think if you are, you're using sort of bottom of your prospect list kind of players. So, I love Story. I'd love for them to sign him. He could be your replacement for Kyle Seager at third. He could end up playing second. If J.P. Crawford does regress, he could still be your shortstop. I mean, there's a lot of options. But if you're looking for a deal this year, I'd rather see them give up resources for Trey Turner than for Trevor Story.
Do you think they should be looking for a deal this year because that wild card spot isn't guaranteed?
Well, I think with those guys you're talking about, you're thinking this year and long term, right? It's not just for this year. It's what makes Merrifield attractive. It's what makes Turner attractive. Is it's not just for this year. It's into your window of the next few seasons when you really expect to be going for it.
Yeah, between Story and Turner, I think I would take Turner over the two or over Story because, I mean, when you trade for a Rockies bat, there's always the question of will that translate in another stadium? And you look at Story splits this season. He's hitting .291 with an .822 OPS at Coors Field. Away from Coors Field, he's hitting .181 with a .630 OPS. That is what the Mariners are getting out of their second baseman right now. You don't want just to give up the farm for somebody that's going to give you the same level of production.
Right.
That, I mean, yeah, Dylan Moore hit the grand slam last night, but over the totality of the season, he has been very underwhelming.
What would you have to give up for Trey Turner again?
You're probably starting, let's say, a package that's Marte, Hancock, and somebody else you don't know.
I do think that I'm far more willing to part ways with Marte than I used to be, and that's changed in the last month or so of Mariners play because I think they're closer to being good than I thought.
I think the issue with all of these questions is it's not who you're giving up or what you're getting. It's the combination of two, right? Are you willing to give up Marte? Well, depends. I'm not willing to give up Marte for a rental.
Right.
I'm not willing to give him up for Trevor Story, where I don't know what I'm going to have at the end of the year, and he just walks away, and I've wasted a top 15 prospect. No thanks. But am I willing to give him up for Trey Turner, who plays the same position, who's already achieved the heights you're hoping Marte can get to, and I've got him for a couple of years, and I can re-sign him? Well, that's a completely different conversation. None of these guys are in a vacuum. I mean, look, there's deals you'd give up Kelnick for. There's deals you'd give up Julio Rodriguez for. They're unlikely. They're probably not going to come to pass. But nothing's untouchable. You have to be willing to make the right deals for the right people at the right time.
Do you think that they can still push Oakland for that second wildcard spot or at least challenge Oakland in the division if they acquire only a starting pitcher and don't shore up that infield?
Yeah, they could, but
is it
tough.
More important to you that it be a starting pitcher? Yeah. Or do you feel like it's impossible, it must be both?
Well, no. To me, the starting pitcher is more important. Could you get something beyond? Could Dylan Moore and or Shed Long play better in the second half than they did in the first? Yes. Definitively, yes. They're both better hitters, I believe, than we saw in the first half of the year. So, yeah, you could survive that. Can you survive without another starting pitcher? God, I don't know. It's really hard for me to imagine you can.
Yeah, you're going to have probably another bullpen day coming up, or maybe like a Hector Santiago starting
maybe
in a couple days.
You're also one injury away from complete disaster.
I think that Flexen is the only starting pitcher to not at some point be on the injured list because of the Kikuchi had a very brief stint that was more. I'm counting it though.
Okay.
I'm counting
it.
It was a scare.
It. Yeah,
technically. All right, we've got Scott Service joining us at 1 p.m., which means we bumped up our 15 most important Seahawks countdown. So do not go anywhere. We're getting you ready for training camp next.